the Dallas Soccer Show. I'm Dustin Nation, and back at the mic this week is Tristan Vick.
How's it going?
A lot has happened since we both recorded together, but first we wanted to thank Alan Reed for joining us last week. If you haven't listened yet to our interview about Toyota Stadium and maintaining the grounds there, you should. It wasn't just a mowing episode. I actually found it super interesting. But back to this episode. First,
you might glean something from it.
Glad to have you back, Tristan. All right. So back to this episode. First, we're going to talk a little bit about FC Dallas, just a little bit. They lost since we've last recorded and also tied against the Red Bull. We'll mainly be discussing that game today. And after that, we'll have a discussion about the U.S. men's national team action over the past couple days against Costa Rica and Honduras. So,
yes, U.S. national team.
All right, so let's get into it. Saturday against the New York Red Bull at home, FC Dallas drew 1-1.
2-2.
So Saturday at home, FC Dallas drew 2-2 with the New York Red Bull. It was a very entertaining match. It had a little bit of drama from all directions. Tristan, what did you think about Ja'Cory Hayes getting a start?
Yeah, so when I saw that he was starting, I thought it was proof that Carter Baum wasn't lying to us when he talked about the importance that somebody like Ja'Cory Hayes may have going forward. So that was nice to hear. But also, I thought that it was another chance for Pareja to put a player in a match against an opponent that mattered and that had something to play for in New York Red Bull, who are also fighting for a playoff spot. It's an important position that he plays in the midfield, but at the same time, the bright lights were on, so to speak. And so, yeah, like you said, this match was end-to-end, lots of action, lots of saves from both sides of the... lots of saves on both sides of the field, but at the same time, he was quite eager. I thought the first yellow card was probably deserved, but I thought the second one was a little bit soft. It probably depends on your perspective, and I'm maybe a little bit biased, but I felt bad for him because I thought the first yellow card, while it was a yellow card, maybe could have been... I didn't feel like he was playing that rough, and so I felt really bad for him when he finally got sent off, not even 40 minutes into the match.
Yeah, when I saw the foul, because I was camping all weekend, and I had enough Wi-Fi to watch the game, but I was doing some stuff, and I turned the phone back on just in time to see that he had gotten the red card. And when they showed the replay, the first replay, I thought it was pretty bad. And then they showed it again. And I don't know, probably it's like one of those 50-50s where I think the fact that he already had a yellow card and he's on the ref's mind kind of probably played a little bit into it.
From a technical perspective, whenever a player goes in from a challenge or for a challenge like that, where the ball's gotten away from him, like on the second red card or your second yellow card, One of the things that's important to watch for is like, when does he start the decision to make a lunge for the ball? Because that often affects whether or not it comes in at a angle that can be deemed to have your studs up or not. And I thought he probably made the decision to go to ground a little bit quicker than what, or sorry, not quicker. I think he made that kind of a delayed decision to do that. And as a result, it obviously came at such an angle that he was already kind of up, kind of down. And so it meant that his studs were going into the player as opposed to maybe this, the top of the boot. And that's in the ref's mind. And he had a decent angle. I still don't think it was a great angle to make that type of decision, but in the ref's mind, it was more than enough to, warrant the second yellow card and the sending off.
Yeah, he went straight for that pocket.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of funny watching the Facebook feed, the two guys that they had commentating, Stephen Keel and I forget the other guy's name, but they were saying, oh, we're going to bring up VAR. And then Stephen Keel just kind of let him hang there for a second and then corrected him politely and said, actually, VAR is for straight red cards. So even if we didn't think it was a true red, it's not a reviewable red, and so we can't really do anything about that. Yeah. And he tweeted out, Ja'Cory Hayes tweeted out, I think it was today or yesterday, that he feels bad for letting the fans down, that he's going to learn from his mistakes. So that's the type of attitude that you want to see from a younger player that's getting a chance to start in his first MLS match.
Yeah, I think speaking of Carter earlier, talking about in our episode where we had him on the show, and he talked about Ja'Cory Hayes. Carter also tweeted out that in the first 37 minutes of that game, he had more tackles than pretty much the entire rest of the team the rest of the game.
Yeah, he was so super active.
Yeah, it was a bright spot, and I look forward to seeing more from him. And I'm this is my first time seeing him, and I'm actually pretty excited about it.
Yep. Now he just has to learn how to keep those studs down. Gets a little excited. And then I think it'll be a great addition to the midfield, create some more competition. And then we can see how people's performances step up, hopefully.
Yeah, competition's always good. So after we got the red card, very shortly afterwards, New York went up 1-0. And
Sasha, the stash.
Yeah,
I love the look.
He looks like, he reminds me of an old time firefighter.
Hey, New York Red Bulls, what would you expect? I mean, the guy, that strike was, I mean, there was a great pass from Bradley Light Phillips, and Sasha Kljestan put it where basically nobody could touch it. I mean, it was a really well-placed shot from the top of the box.
Yeah. Jesse Gonzalez had no chance there. The defense, maybe you could have done a little bit better, but he put a pretty good move on him there.
I mean, there's definitely something to be said for the ability of a player to put a shot like that in the top corner. But at the same time, yeah, if we put a little more pressure, we don't let him make that lateral movement for where he gets the ball kind of at the top of the box in the center and then kind of drifts to the right with it and gets it right on his favored right foot, tees it up. I mean, definitely should have a little more pressure. And if we put some pressure on there, perhaps it doesn't come off the right way. Maybe deflects for a corner, but I mean, Sasha Kljestan is somebody who plays with no regard for anyone else. So I can't fault him for that goal. I mean, he took his opportunities. Yep. So great pass, great setup, and great finish.
Definitely. So FC Dallas was down by a man pretty much from the 37th minute on, down by a goal. We go into halftime, come out of halftime, and old Blue Boots himself, Hernan Grana, gets himself his first goal.
Yeah, the South Americans really combined well for that one. And what'd you think of the breakaway? There was some great overlapping runs where Grana came inside while Barrios was on the outside. That's kind of what you want to see with that relationship.
Yeah, I think that's the reason why they play over there together. They've had some pretty good chemistry in the past couple of games. Combined well, got up the side. You know, that's what we want to see from our players going forward, and especially from Barrios, that seems to be his bread and butter right there. Just, you know, getting up that side, bursting past a man and making a play from the wing.
Do you think that Dallas fans will be able to see this again though? Because it felt like they were particularly up for this match. Do you think this is going to hold on the road and when they come back to Toyota Stadium next weekend?
That's a tough call. My heart says yes. My head says maybe. I think it depends on how we reintegrate the international players. I think that, you know, obviously that was one of the things we had missing that whole game. And so we had players in there that had something to prove. Ja'Cory Hayes come in for a place. We've got Victor Ulloa, who had another good game. He was trying to fight for his starting spot with Acosta gone. And we also had some interesting backstories with the Arruda and Barrios transfer drama that had gone on throughout the week. And so I think you saw a pretty good response from them coming into this game as well.
I felt like Rudy celebrating that goal as much as he did was kind of showing that this is behind us as far as the transfer drama goes. So hopefully that's a good sign for something to come. Yeah, I mean, I agree with you on the integrating the national team players, which obviously we have some issues with, but we've got Atlanta United coming up, and then obviously the Sounders coming to town. If you can't get up for the Seattle Sounders, I don't know how you're going to get up for it, but that Atlanta United crowd's going to be pretty fired up. It'll be something good to play off of. Hopefully they get something out of it, but at the same time, I think it's great to see the interchange. There's I don't think Dallas had too many matches in this 6-game winless run that we were on that we didn't have good opportunities. It was just a lack of finishing. And obviously on Saturday with the Grana goal and then with converting the penalty and creating the penalty, finishing wasn't an issue.
Yeah. Yeah. They took their chances well. They definitely showed a lot of heart because after they drew level, New York went back ahead and they came back and won that penalty. So yeah, definitely a lot of fight and heart there. And we want to see that kind of fight and heart when there's 11 men on the pitch. And so
what'd you think of Diaz? I thought Diaz played really well. I thought he was not trying to do too much, but at the same time, he was in his comfort zone.
Yeah, I was going to say he looked very comfortable out there. He didn't look rushed. He looked like he had some more time on the ball than he hasn't had in a while. It seems like the past couple of games that he actually has played in, the teams have pressured him and been right up on him, not really giving him a whole lot of time on the ball. And I felt like he had a little bit more time, whether he was making it or whether they were just weren't marking him as closely. And I think it played a big role in SC Dallas's ability to mount that attack and create things going forward.
Yeah, he really knows how to place the ball, especially whenever players like Barrios and Rudy are really combining well. I think that right-hand side is going to be really tough to deal with this weekend. I hope they keep the pressure up, but I mean, Barrios is obviously somebody who hasn't gotten on the score sheet, but he's had a couple of assists. He keeps getting those passes in. I think, here's my hot take, is I think Barrios gets a goal, or at least comes close to getting a goal this weekend, because he seemed to be very in tune to what Grana was doing, being able to work off of him, and then using Rudy to kind of draw the defense, get him a little bit wider so that he can get him behind. And I think Atlanta United definitely is betting in still. I mean, they're obviously better than Minnesota United, but at the same time, I think Atlanta United is a team that we should go out and we should get a point, and we should really be looking for a draw. I mean, sorry, for all 3 points against a team like that. We are a team that's been playing together more or less for the past three seasons with this same core group. And when Costa and Hedges come back, it's only going to add to that chemistry, that cohesion. That's where it should really shine and really make a difference. I thought we could have actually won this match if it weren't for Robles having a really good game in net for the New York Red Bulls. What'd you think of old man Morales getting a run out?
You know, I definitely wasn't expecting to see him come in at halftime, but I mean, it obviously proved to be the right choice. Whatever it was that he brought helped spark our offense. Maybe it was a little bit more experience in the midfield. I mean, I don't know. Like I said, I watched most of the game on an iPhone, and so it was really hard. It was really hard to tell the players apart.
So he came on for Lamal out on the left, and Lamal really was isolated for a lot of the match because they were dealing with Tyler Adams, who is a budding star for the United States. He really had a great match and taking players like Grana out of the match. And marking them and positionally just playing really well. I think that Morales was brought in to kind of balance with Diaz and kind of let Diaz know that he doesn't have to be constantly going. He can kind of slow it down a little bit and just use his positioning to cause some trouble. He has accurate passing. I mean, he's not too threatening, obviously, with space, but he can place the ball where he needs to. And so that was really key.
Sure. Before we move away from FC Dallas, I wanted to talk about a couple of things. The refereeing and VAR, seems like there's been a lot of discussion about the refs and VAR in the past couple FC Dallas games. And I wanted to get your take on whether you think FC Dallas has been hard done over the past couple of games by the refs, by Toledo, by the one over against New York, and by the seeming failure to use VAR.
I don't think so.
No?
No, you can't. For starters, I don't feel like officials are really going to want to use that to necessarily enhance any of their decisions as much as it is to clarify the key decisions. It's very much so retroactive.
Okay, so what about when they took Diaz down in the box? Did you see that one?
Yeah, I think some of them were a minor perspective, but at the same time, I don't think that it's not something you go to the video review for. Again, I want to see less of it. I'd rather complain about the refs than say we should have gone to the video review for stuff, just because it really does break up the play of game and I flow of the match. And while we've had some goals disallowed in a couple cases, I don't think it necessarily is the solution to these tight calls that people like to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that just having VAR has affected the officiating. I think that referees are starting to be a little, from what I've seen, they're starting to be a little bit more hesitant to actually make a call, and they're because they've got the backup of VAR, and then VAR never happens. And so there is a different feeling to the way that games are officiated. And you start, I have seen the refs be the story on multiple games, and you shouldn't have the refs be the story of the game.
No, absolutely not. I wouldn't want them to be the story of the match, but at the same time, you really do have to take into account that players are going to play, and I wouldn't say somebody like Diaz has a tendency to dive, but you have to call it both ways. And if you want a more physical match, which maybe the league's pushing for, you're not going to make the calls that seem to be kind of on the edge and maybe not straight 50-50, but maybe lean a little bit more towards the offensive player. And so you kind of just, they fall that way sometimes. So.
Yeah. I asked this question on Twitter and at Dallas Soccer Show, and Will Perkins, who is @_Gringuino_, responded back that as long as we have quote unquote Toledo like refs, MLS will continue to suffer. Yes, easy to sideline ref and not be objective. However, it is MLS wide. So,
yeah, the level of officiating in the league is very consistent, but most of it is consistently subpar. For those of you who watch European football regularly, or whether it's the Premier League or the Bundesliga or La Liga, it's not always up to par, and that can hurt us at times, as we'll see in the when we get to the internationals. But before we do that, quick take on the table as we look at where we are with our first points after a while. But FC Dallas is nowhere near the top any longer. It's a very worrying development. I mean, we've had a really bad run of form, and now we are 5 points off the top with a game in hand on Seattle. We're down in sixth. We're barely into the playoffs. We have a decent goal differential, but we really do need to win those games in hand to make up some ground on the top of the table going forward. So this visit to Atlanta, which they're in sixth as well over in the Eastern Conference, will be something that I would hope for some points out of. Maybe we sneak on a win, but again, Atlanta United's a brand new club that has a lot of energy behind it. It's going to be somewhat of a hostile environment. So yeah, who knows what'll happen.
I was doing some looking back because I was wondering about our form, and the only games we've won since May were June 3rd against Salt Lake City when our U.S. players were out, July 1st against Toronto when our U.S. players were out, July 4th against D.C. United when our U.S. players were out, and July 22nd when our U.S. players were out against Montreal. So I'm interested to see if we're able to reintegrate the U.S. players back into the squad and even the other internationals that were gone.
Yep, it'll be different. Not quite sure.
I asked the question several times this week. But are we better without our internationals? And I am thinking that right now the answer may be yes, but we shall see this weekend against Atlanta.
Yeah, that's an interesting thing to see, that they only win whenever players like Kellen or Matt are out. But at the same time, I wouldn't be surprised. I'm sorry, I keep saying that, but at the same time, FC Dallas is a team that strives. I know. FC Dallas is a team that kind of thrives on some cohesion. When you have a team that is built up of a lot of South Americans, as well as a lot of academy products, there's a good relationship throughout the club. So we're able to adapt and adjust, and players step up for those matches when the regular starters are out. And that's something that FC Dallas as a club, it has kind of unique, is that they have a steady pipeline of players that are maybe not ready to be full-time starters, but if you need them to give you a match or two, they're able to go out there and give it a go.
The Dallas Soccer Show, your source of FC Dallas banter and U.S. Men's National Team news and coverage. So let's move on to the U.S. Men's National Team action over the weekend. They played on Friday against Costa Rica, and actually tonight, Tuesday night, against Honduras. So
yes.
Let's start with Friday night's action against Costa Rica. They lost 0-2. Tristan, what was your take on that game?
All right. So I watched this match twice and felt like the United States basically, here's what it is. The United States, when they fired Klinsmann, basically hired Arena and to kind of steady the ship that is CONCACAF and the Hex and get through it. And what instead we've seen is we've seen some shakeups, like when they went to Mexico and played the unique new formation with the five at the back. And on the same international break, they would go back to their more traditional formations. What I thought of this match was Costa Rica is a team that is incredibly good at the counterattack, very skilled, very technically skilled. And instead of the United States converting opportunities, we had basically got embarrassed on our own field by who is a striker for them, who is basically a second-rate MLS striker from San Jose that we should have never let be in that position. Tim Ream let in a horrendous goal. I thought that the second goal was even worse, or it was pretty bad, but not as worse as the first goal. Tim Howard really and truly does not look fit. He does not look like the Tim Howard of a la Belgium round of 16 of 2014 World Cup. I really think that Graham Zusi needs to go because Graham Zusi is not a right back full time. He does not have the natural instincts of a right back. I mean, what's the point of having a depth chart, so to speak, on your squad if you're not going to play players in their natural positions? And especially against a team like Costa Rica that's very organized and very quick, they may not necessarily have the most overpowering front line, but they are able to work together really well. And if you drop the ball on your side of the field, which they went after Zusi constantly, then you're going to expose the rest of your defense. And when somebody like Tim Ream gets placed in a position like that, where he's one-on-one and he commits, tries to, I don't know what he was trying to do, but he tries to play the ball back on his own, it's going to lead to issues. And that's how they scored their first goal. We were obviously threatening throughout the match, and it was really promising to see that threatening going forward. But in retrospect, it was a prelude of things to come tonight in Honduras.
Yeah, I think Bruce Arena said that the team got outplayed and he got outcoached in that game against Costa Rica. And you would have hoped to have seen a bounce back and a determination against Honduras coming out. And tonight they came out and then they went 1-0 down.
Yeah, it was a goal that, again, was not against the run of play. It was totally and completely warranted and deserved. The defense really and truly could have, it was Omar Gonzalez plays center back for in Liga MX. And while he's viewed as someone who is high quality in the United States, the problem I have with Omar Gonzalez is I think he's technically, he needs too much time on the ball in order to be considered good when it comes to his technique. But second, his positioning has been really poor, especially since the Gold Cup earlier in the summer. He was constantly playing too deep for an offside trap to hit. He was playing guys onside that would score goals. And in this case, he was poorly positioned, and Zusi in the same way was very poorly positioned. And that's why they went after him over on the right. And if you can't set your team up straight and right from the get-go, what are you doing? And now I'm not saying that Arena needs to go or anything. What I am saying is that we need to start keep playing players our best 11. And a guy like Jeff Cameron should be starting the match, not coming on to right the ship when we're down one goal away in Honduras. I don't care if he has to go back to Stoke and miss a match because he was tired from traveling all the way from New Jersey, which that's a whole nother subject, back down. The crowd in New Jersey, which we'll talk about that, the crowd in New Jersey was great. It was rocking. The Outlaws were there. And then as soon as we went down, the Costa Ricans came out. And that's the problem playing somewhere like that is that, yes, Bruce is from New Jersey. We have a lot of fans in New Jersey. They did stuff with the ticketing to make it more friendly for the Americans. But at the same time, if you look at the schedule and you say, we're going to go into New Jersey and then we're going to fly all the way down to Honduras. And I realize these guys fly in what are essentially chartered planes, But at the same time, that's a lot of distance to cover. It was like 100+ degrees heat index today. And
did they get their
coming
water
off the defense? They got their water breaks, got the orange slices.
I was worried.
But at the same time, what are we doing when it comes to thinking about starting your best player? And if you can say we have to play our best player against Costa Rica, but then when we go to Honduras, we're going to rest our best players in certain positions, I don't think you set up to win either of those matches. You're setting up to just get a point or two from each of them. And I felt like Honduras set up to win. They went after the match constantly. Let's go to Costa Rica first.
Sure.
You said that coach or the arena said he got outcoached and the team got outplayed.
Yep.
When a coach says that as a player, what type of confidence does that inspire in the way that he's coaching you?
Not much.
Right. And so when the coach comes out and he says, I know you got worked over on the right-hand side, but I'm going to give you another go around. What type of pressure now does that player have? Because he thinks after Costa Rica, like somebody like Zusi, that he just completely lost the plot. He's never going to start on the right-hand side for the national team. I mean, if you put Zusi in his natural position, the right midfield, he's never going to play for the United States because we have enough players out there, right? So what type of confidence? It doesn't inspire a lot of confidence.
And it tells you that you can screw up however you want and there's not going to be any consequences.
Exactly. And that's the problem with playing somebody like Zusi on it right back, letting Beasley go out to the left back. You have young guys that want to play for this team and are willing to play for this team. And I feel like Arena, the one advantage he has on most other potential U.S. national team coaches is he understands the MLS system and the MLS draft and the college system. What he doesn't understand and what I think he's admitting here is that he feels limited in the talent pool that he has in the back line because there is no Yedlin, because there is no John Brooks. And that's leading him to put players in positions where it'll work during the group stages and even some knockout rounds of the Gold Cup when you're playing Panama and Jamaica, but it won't work against a team like Honduras, which is kind of shocking to say, actually. I mean, like, no disrespect to Honduras, but like the United States should be beating a team like Honduras if they want to be taken seriously in the world of football. And I don't know. I was pretty disappointed. If you go, so let's go back to the other parts of the Costa Rica loss. How many times did you see players like Nagby and Pulisic get just knocked back, just totally trucked off the ball constantly, right?
Yeah, I just, like I said, I was camping, but I did watch the highlights and it did look like a rather physical game from Costa Rica, even from Honduras.
Yeah, and Honduras especially was very, very physical. And Pulisic's used to that, right? He plays at a very fast pace for his club. But a player like Nagby is going to get frustrated. And we need to have players like Kellen came in against Honduras and looked decent. But at the same time, we need more players of the Pulisic quality that can deal with being knocked around and either stay on their feet or get back up and bring it to the players as well. And Jermaine Jones was this for a long period of time, but Jermaine Jones is getting up there. He's too injury prone to be reliable for this position in the center of midfield.
Yeah. And I've watched him with the LA Galaxy and he's just not the greatest at football anymore.
Right. He's lost a lot of pace and part of the midfield positioning is what's so important about that role. And he doesn't have that either any longer. So maybe it's all the time he spent with Gerrard. No, I'm just kidding. They're getting their ages up there. But at the same time, the United States really needs to find a player that they can partner up there. And Jeff Cameron is somebody who is really still proving his worth. I can't wait for John Brooks and Timmy Chandler and Fabian Johnson to get some matches under their belt in the Bundesliga. I really wish Arena would be more willing to take some chances on some players. We have a match at home to Panama. I think that the mindset needs to be win at home and win at Trinidad and Tobago away, and then we qualify.
So what are the paths going forward for the United States to make the World Cup?
Yeah, so luckily for us, it stayed pretty simple. So after the loss on Friday night, there was a lot of talk about how the United States was not going to qualify for the World Cup. And that was a bit of a hyperbole from the fake news media. Hashtag fake news sad. Here's why. The match against Costa Rica mattered in that if we had won it, we would have gone, we would have been ahead of Honduras, right? Sole possession of third place on points. The top three places in CONCACAF, there are six teams left, qualify for the World Cup automatically. The fourth place team goes into the playoff with the winner of the playoff round in the Asian qualifications. So you really don't want to be in that position. It's just not something you want. That's a lot of travel, not a good position to be in. However, going into tonight, we were level, like I said, on points with Honduras. If we had drawn, we drew, so we're still level on points, but we have them beat by goal difference by like 8 or 9 goals. Now, Panama, though, is right behind us. Panama is on 7 points. They are playing tonight against Trinidad. They're going to win that match. I think we're recording it around 9:30, so you can probably look it up and see. But a team like Trinidad and Tobago has not done well in the hex this year. They really and truly are. So it's tied right now, but it's only 26 minutes in. I would be surprised if Panama doesn't win that and go above us and knock us down to fourth. Now, this is where it gets tricky. Panama plays the United States, and we get Panama here in the States. Now, if we do not win that match and Honduras gets a result against Costa Rica, we have to stay above Costa Rica or level, or sorry, we have to stay above or level with Honduras on points for us to qualify for the World Cup. But if we draw with Panama and Panama wins tonight, then Panama is still ahead of us on points. And so we're down in the fourth place position still. Honduras is in fifth. Now we finish with Trinidad and Tobago away and Panama gets Costa Rica at home. Those could go either way. And if we end up coming out in fifth, in fourth, then we qualify for that playoff. Right now, that's going to be between Australia and Syria, which is actually like the feel-good story of the year. Syria got a last, they got a last-minute equalizer to go to stay alive for the World Cup, which I just think is great. And so hopefully we don't get in that position to knock them or Australia out, but I wouldn't fancy our chances against Australia, that's for sure. So yeah, I'm a little bummed about the position we're in. The hex should be something we have no trouble with, but we've had some really bad results at home and that's costing us down the road.
Okay, so it doesn't sound like it's going to be that impossible for us to get into the World Cup, but it's definitely going to be a challenge. And you know, there's that
there's uncertainty with everything in this qualification.
There's that uncertainty that's out there. So you mentioned that we should be going down to Honduras and teams like that. And we're America. We've got better resources. We've got a larger country with, you know, a more vast talent pool. Why can't we go down and to Honduras and just win easy anymore, or go to any of these other places where we should be being able to just breeze by and not have to worry about winning our last two matches? What is it you think that causes that?
I think that the causes are numerous, but the most obvious ones are a lack of quality. We may have more people, but when we have a couple of key players get injured, our team falls apart. And that's due to the reliance on the college system. That's due to the reliance on pay-for-play at the youth level and not developing players for our national team. It's specifically dealing with arena. I think the biggest issue is not having a true footballing identity. Imagine how much harder this would be if we didn't have a player like Pulisic to pick from, or if we didn't have a Bobby Wood to run up top. those types of players, or maybe not Pulisic, but Bobby Wood should not be a once in a generation type player. Instead, we should have a number of players like Bobby Wood competing regularly, and we don't. The biggest issue I see preventing us from taking that next step to not being CONCACAF and just knocked around like that.
Wait, hold on. CONCACAF? What does that mean?
Yeah, so CONCACAF is, I mean, that's just something that people talk about sometimes, where you go to these smaller countries like Honduras and Panama and El Salvador, and it's a very hostile environment where you maybe only have 20, 30, maybe 40,000 fans in the stadium, but they're right on top of the pitch. They're calling you names. They're heckling you for being an American. They're calling you soft because they know that you go home to your plush bed and they have it tougher than us. The same things that people in America think would be strengths for our team, that we have all these great resources and we have all of this talent to pull from, are the exact same reasons why when we go to Honduras and we get a 1-1 draw barely, we get laughed at by the rest of the CONCACAF region, is because they say, look at all the stuff you have and how poor you still are. And I think that's a really fair criticism, because most of our players have grown up in the youth soccer mindset. They didn't have a lot of hardship. I mean, players like Pulisic went to Germany because they knew that's how they got better, and they're open to those things. Players like Weston McKennie leave FC Dallas, which is a great academy situation, because they want to go and play for teams in Germany or in Europe, or players go to Mexico where they know they'll be challenged regularly and taken out of their comfort zone. And that is what's missing from a lot of players on the U.S. national team. And some of those are, not everybody on the U.S. national team is an example of that, but you can definitely see where some players could have extended their careers by putting themselves in a more competitive environment. And the MLS is not a bad place to go for development. There have been some really good players coming out of that. Like Nagby, I think, is a really solid player. And Kellen Acosta is turning into a very solid player. It's just players need to be challenged regularly and hear a little bit different when it comes to coaching. If you listen to an interview with Christian Pulisic and the way that he talks about soccer, it is so much more than just a job for him. It's about exploring what it means to be a player, and it's about exploring what it means to be a creator of the offense, and not just, am I fast? Because the United States is always told, hey, you guys are always going to be working hard. We're always going to be the fittest team out there. And oftentimes that is true, but tonight you really didn't see it. And that bugged me quite a bit. I thought Bobby Wood played really well coming out there and just trying much harder. And Areola looked pretty decent as well and really worked to bring the ball in, to create some opportunities and to shake things up. But ultimately, they have no back line that's going to protect them, so the midfield will never go forward. And that's rough. If you don't have a back line, you're not going to go very far as far when it comes to a national team. So to sum it up, this is kind of what I want to see changed. When he announces the squad for the October qualifiers, for the trip that Panama is coming here, and then our trip away to Trinidad and Tobago, I want to see Graham Zusi out. I don't want him in the squad. I don't want to see DeMarcus Beasley in the squad. And I don't want to see somebody like Chris Wondolowski in the squad, just because what's the point? And really and truly. Instead, let's get some young blood in there. Let's get players that actually might make the squad for when we go to the World Cup, if we ever go to the World Cup, and not some players that played well in the Gold Cup that nobody sent a real team to.
That's interesting, because if I remember correctly, I think in our World Cup roster prediction, which may be premature, you had Beasley in it and Zusi in it.
I did. I had Zusi in it grudgingly, because I don't think there's been the emergence of a strong right back, and that was my opinion. Mm-hmm. But going forward, I really don't think he cuts the quality out. And so I'd have to reevaluate some of our other options at the right back position. And that, I mean, one of the important parts of Zusi's game was his versatility. And that is not cutting it these days, especially if you're only going to be played at your weakest position on the pitch, then you really don't warrant the spot there. And I'm not trying to bash Zusi for what he's done. He's been a great player for the national team, but his positioning and his instinct is just not that of a right back. Instead, I really feel like you have to question players starting with what is their true instinctive position. And that's why players like Bradley and Nagby and Pulisic do so well, is they are instinctively trying to push forward, trying to press the ball, press the play, and it's creating some identity to the team, which is what you want from a midfielder. And then on the defensive side, I think Jeff Cameron is doing what he's supposed to be doing. He's trying to create enough of a situation where we're not constantly playing the ball out of the back, which we did a lot of tonight, and stretched our defense and made the midfield work even harder and exposed the back line. And so those types of players like Cameron, and I would even say that Beasler looked that way at times, are the types of players that strengthen not just their position, but they make it easier for the midfield to do their job.
All right. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. So if you like what you've been hearing and you appreciate our show, please share with your friends and feel free to say hi on social media. That's at Dallas Soccer Show on Twitter. We don't have Facebook or the Instagrams or any of the other newfangled social medias, mainly Twitter right now. But also,
if you're into soccer, you should get on Twitter. It's the best place to follow in the game. It really is.
And then also you can see our show notes at DallasSoccerShow.com. So
we'll be back next week with a review of FC Dallas's trip to Atlanta and hopefully some 3 points.
Yes, let's bust that slump. Let's get some points. Let's get into the playoff picture, and yeah, let's go, boys.
All right, sounds good. You have a good one, Dustin.
You're welcome.